When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. I'm your host, Matt Ardell. This past week, we heard the sad news that Bob Newhart had passed away. Born September 5th, 1929, he passed on July 18th, 2024. Bob was a comedy icon whose career stretched from 1958 and continued until 2020. His material was delivered in a deadpan, slow-burn style that permeated all of his appearances. Some of us got to know him through his sitcoms like The Bob Newhart Show and Newhart. Others of us got to know him through later guest appearances on shows like The Big Bang Theory or as the adopted elf father on Elf. And still others of us got to know him through his comedy albums and early comedy appearances, like his variety show with Carol Burnett or his album The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart. He broke boundaries in comedy, being the first comedy album to land a number one spot on the charts that would later transform into the Billboard 200. He sat in for Carson, he was referenced on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and Mad Men, he was awarded the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. He was a fixture and an inspiration for going in weird new directions. When he was coming up in the world of comedy, his peers were acts like Don Rickles, Jerry Lewis, Bob Hope, and Lenny Bruce. American comedians were driven by a performance that was bold and brash. But then you had Bob Newhart, quiet and collected. Deadpan delivery of sketches and situational comedy with one-sided telephone conversations delivered in a calm, almost exasperated voice. A gentle consternation that came to define his later work, and it resonated and has continued to resonate down the ages. In memory of his passing, we are re-releasing our 2017 episode hosted by Jason DeLine with guests Craig Fay, Martha O'Neill, and Jeremy Woodcock, recorded at the Social Capital Theater October 5th, 2017. Thanks, Bob, for the laughs. You will be remembered, and hopefully, wherever you are, Larry, Daryl, and Daryl are finally leaving you alone.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Newhart.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Forget it. Right. Mr. Doubleday, listen, though. You come up with anything, two, three couples, you'll be sure and let us know. Huh? All right, Mr. Doubleday, I'll be talking. Right.
Okay, so that was The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart, ladies and gentlemen, 1960. We'll pretend that Bob can somewhere hear your applause. Okay, so I'm going to bring up my guest for this evening. My first guest has his own comedy album called Helicopter Rich. He is a local comedian, and you can buy this album on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. His name is Craig Fay. Please welcome Craig Fay, ladies and gentlemen. right? Welcome.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to bring up my next guest, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, my next guest is a comedian here in town. She's the executive producer of the She Dot Festival, which showcases funny women through stand-up, sketch, improv, storytelling, workshops, and expert panels. Please welcome Martha O'Neill. Martha. And my third guest, he's an actor, comedian, and writer. He has many writing credits, including more than 30 episodes of This Hour Has 22 Minutes. And he is a huge Bob Newhart fan. Please give a warm welcome to Jeremy Woodcock. All right, so we just heard The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart. Have you all heard this before?
I assume no.
You haven't heard it, Martha?
No, first okay. for me. First
cool.
for me.
Like
okay.
once before for me.
Once before. So you picked this, Craig.
Yeah.
So what made you pick it?
So, okay, so I feel like I'm a bit of a fraud. Because I think when you were putting together this show, you sort of asked, like, what were some really early influential albums? Mm-hmm. And I had literally just listened to this album, and I was like, this is a good one. And I put it forward. And then you said, and you're going to be on the same show as Jeremy. And if you look at Jeremy's Twitter photo, it is him with Bob Newhart. So I was like, I may be a little outgunned here, but that's fine.
Well, at the very least, you got Jeremy Woodcock on the show.
So. That's right. So I'll defer to him. But no, it's and beyond that, like it is within the comedy community, it's sort of held up as this like very early, very influential album. And as you said off the top, like it won a Grammy, like, you know, he won Best New Artist. Like it was number one on the Billboard charts, which is insane for any comedy album these days, right? So I guess that those are the reasons I picked that.
Cool, fair enough. And so we'll just skip over to Jeremy. He hasn't said anything yet, just that little impressed noise. thank you for doing it again. You can tell I liked it. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your love for Bob Newhart and how this photo came about with you and
sure.
him.
Well, that photo was taken at it wasn't he and I hanging out. I'd seen him at Roy Thompson Hall about 5 years ago. And
he was performing.
Yeah. No, we were both watching Aerosmith. And, but yeah, he performed, and then I kind of loitered around the front. And usually, like after a concert or a show, like things go on forever. But it was like 1 minute after everybody. I was the youngest person there, and they were kind of like everybody head home. Wow. So I was just walking sort of behind Roy Thompson Hall rather than going along King or Queen or whatever it is. And he was just getting into a car, like a little car driven by someone. And somebody said, Bob. And he said, oh, and he just started to give a little one second. It was all so casual and so like old school. The whole thing was old school. I was telling Craig, a jazz band was his opener.
What?
A jazz band played for 30 minutes and then brought out a vocalist for the last song, as if a vocalist was like the wave of the future. Yeah. And then
you ain't seen nothing yet.
No. And then I just said, can I get a picture with you? And I told him I was a comedian. He said, good luck, which I've in retrospect like turned into a compliment, but it's really just a pure nice thing to say. But I'm like, it was a vote of confidence, but it was just good luck.
Fantastic.
He had no idea. Yeah.
That's so cool. So were you a big fan before you saw him that night?
I had never heard of him. No, I actually got into him in a weird like way you might get into like a band. I got there at the library, at the Whitby Public Library, there was a greatest hits, like a best of Bob Newhart, which had a driving instructor and the Abraham Lincoln mm-hmm. and then a bunch of other things like a bus driver, which was the driving instructor, but just as funny. And and then I went back and found this album eventually after like checking out his greatest hits.
Cool.
Yeah.
And Martha, yeah, you haven't heard this album before.
No,
so what
no.
are your
well, I grew up watching Bob Newhart. I mean, sure. I was really little, of course. I was like an infant.
Yeah.
I don't even know what year it came out, but it was on. Like we got four channels growing up, and Bob Newhart, and something about him. He was always kind of he made me laugh. And I was talking to somebody before the show downstairs. They said doesn't hold up. The show doesn't hold up. I don't know if that's true or not. And now I'm going to go home and I'm going to watch him again because he was like the gentle uncle. people who just made you laugh. And I didn't watch so much of the Hotel Newhart show.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know why.
That's how I was introduced to him through that show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have either you guys seen the old Bob Newhart show recently to comment if it held up? You just heard of Bob Newhart a month ago, Craig.
No. I have not actually seen his sitcoms.
Okay. No, yeah. I was Jeremy? Really into the Mary. Sorry, I didn't drop. No, I was no. really into the Mary Tyler Moore show and Rhoda, and he was of that mm-hmm. ilk.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean to me. So I was a big fan of all that kind of television programming. So I'm disappointed, but I am going to go back and check it out.
Yeah, I can definitely say the second one, the inn, like the Vermont, the hotel, mm-hmm. the inn really does hold up.
Does it?
I assume the first one does just because it's him, but yeah. It doesn't replay as much, maybe because they figure it's like very, very early 70s.
Yeah.
Well, so much has changed. I mean, almost you could argue that nothing holds up if you give enough time to go by because the attention spans change and the pacing of things change.
Yeah. And with him, pacing is everything, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's his thing is the slow, stumbling, easy pace. But I don't know about you guys, but that just whipped by. Like that was just something very soothing about him. It's like he's just speaking to you. He's like a pal or something.
Yeah. It's interesting that he plays all these different characters, but they're essentially all the same person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what really struck me listening to it tonight, sort of in the dark, was how well it's written for the ear. And that none of this stuff could be turned into a visual medium and work. You know, a lot of the jokes come from him revealing something to you that if you were witnessing it, you would already know.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is just a genius way to think about how joke structure works.
Yeah.
Like it's just incredible when he's talking to the driver, the driver instructor, where she's saying the red light. He said, "Oh, the red light." And, "Oh, yes, officer," she's just explaining that to me. And that's our reveal that the officer's there. Like,
the funny bits in that one particularly were the surprises, like the safety island. You know, those little things. And if they tried to do it as a televised sketch, as you say, it would have been all given away. And,
And he's so good at holding on to those sort of secrets and planting those jokes when you need them. And they hit with such force because you realize this has been happening the whole time. And it's such a different style of comedy than we're using.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think what struck me most was like when he was doing the jokes, it was very well paced. Actually, I remember the first time listening to it, thinking that this was really slow paced and there weren't a lot of like laughs per minute. Re-listening to it now, there actually was. But what seemed to slow it down was the fact, and this is very strange to anyone who's seen stand-up comedy recently, is the setups are not part of the joke. they're so external to it. And the only time he got a little close where you like sort of saw, oh, this is going to be stand-up in like 50 years was that the driving instructor joke. And he goes, there's a group of people who go out every day.
Yeah.
Right. And it's so dangerous and they never know who they're going to come home, and those people are driving instructors.
Yeah.
And that's the closest he got to the setup. But then to the setup actually being the joke, and then he did a setup. He's like, okay, and pretend this is a car. I'm driving and there's a woman next to me. And what struck me about that was, again, with 50 years of seeing stand-up that's come after it, you go, you could have just sat down and said, okay, Miss, I forget the name that he uses, but like, hello, Miss Smith or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm your driving instructor today. And that would have been enough information for us. But he did the pretend you're in a car and this is the windshield.
But it was 1960. It was 1960 that this was a whole new form of theater, really.
Yeah, and that's the other thing you got to take into account, right, is... That was the first time anyone had ever done it, so you had to explain it.
He was also not a seasoned comedian. I mean, he'd been doing it, I think, sort of as a hobby for about 2-3 years at this point.
I believe the legend is that was his first performance.
That can't be true.
First live.
Oh, no, that was just a spooky.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not the expert, by the way.
That, yeah. Or it was like, it was one of his first four or something like that.
Well, if you listen to the audience, they weren't like laughing that hard for the most of it. Like usually modern comedy albums, they make sure it's a hot crowd. And there were chuckles and a few coughs here and there and people clinking their glasses. It was actually a very interesting choice to put that out as an album. But I guess, again, this is a whole new medium and
It seemed like dinner theater. I feel like I could hear waiters or something in the background talking. Yeah, very interesting. But I thought the crowd was pretty hot at the very beginning, and I found it distracting at first because I thought, oh man, if these people laugh at everything, nothing's going to land well. You know, it's like, you know, if you're sitting with someone who laughs at every joke and something, almost none of the jokes are funny to you because it's over the top.
Mm-hmm. Well, and some of what's funny is like him mentioning like Ulysses S. Grant being alcoholic and people are like, that's what everybody's going to remember about Lincoln.
Yeah.
Well, and the Khrushchev joke is the best example of that on this album. Where you're like, I guess this was a thing that happened.
That's the one to me that doesn't really hold up. That's very much a moment of time.
Well,
when Khrushchev came to the U.S., it was 1 year before this came out. So very timely then.
Yeah.
But it's also, like if we did Young Sheldon.
Well, I would also, if you think about it, he was talking about live television news, which was quite a new concept in 1960. Mm. So a lot of it, like, if you think about it, I have a news background. And so the timing that this took place, I mean, I can imagine. So I was enjoying it just based on knowing when the album was recorded and when all this happened in history, and also knowing how difficult, like, that the audience got on board with this run through of this Russian leader who was a feared man stumbling and hitting and the woman, wife. I thought I liked that one, actually, I think, the best.
And that's something people never would have been exposed to. Like, everything was so packaged for what they get to see and to hear. Like, the guy in the control room before they were doing all these behind the scenes shows and everything, I feel like that would be like a little thrill to be like, oh my god, this is the guy, this is what we're not hearing while it all goes on.
I enjoyed that I think the most.
And he that was kind of the, I would say, the theme of the whole album, almost, with maybe the exception of the driving instructor, is like, this is what happens behind the scenes, right? This is what this is what the PR guy would say to Abraham Lincoln. So this is the call that, you know.
What is it about him and marketers, though? I mean, there must have been, was it three or four of them about marketing and PR?
Yeah.
For an accountant. Yeah. It's not like he came from a PR background.
No.
Interesting.
I mean,
he did live in Chicago, right? Is that?
Big marketing town, yeah.
This is the part where I don't say that I've never seen Mad Men, and I ask if this is Mad Men times and Mad Men location.
Well, we're getting into that for sure, the heyday of advertising. I mean, I think it was just probably, sort of a new medium that was something he saw the opportunity to poke fun at.
I don't know. It was interesting.
And it could be even like a pure, like, because it's not like, here's what works for stand-up, and like, not knowing what a stand-up album is or anything, like, maybe he was just so into that for like his first couple years of stand-up that, like, again, it's an early, if he'd been doing it for a couple years or a couple performances, it's like 6/8 of his, there's a simpler way to say that, but like a large chunk of his, like, just set is about advertising. Like, he hasn't expanded it yet. And he's like, everything I'm writing is about this thing. I'm just going
to, if you were trying to sell XYZ, how would you sell it?
And you could see it as like a novice comedian. Like, I'm seeing, he's seeing everything. Like, it could be seen as a weakness if it wasn't so good, but he's like, everything is like, what if an advertiser? Like, what if Jack Nicholson, but like, seeing everything through that, but it works.
And it's so hot now to say something like, it might sound a little something like this.
Yeah.
I mean, he invented that phrase. And, you know, we were talking about this a little bit last month, is sometimes it's hard to take that filter off of us of the things that we've seen since and not feel that it's cliche, not feel that it's hack, because
we're so jaded. New. We are. I enjoyed the submarine one, too, because he was actually addressing a group of men. Again, it was a different approach to the marketing thing.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. And the idea of just hiding a human on the submarine.
Weird. Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of fun.
The line I loved from that, I thought it was just such a brilliant piece, right? I didn't have to read it to be, was the looking back on the mutiny. Yeah. It's just such a, like, it tells you everything that you need to know. And the other thing about that is it doesn't hit until the very last word, which is, I love in comedy, where you go, looking back on the, literally anything else could come, like looking back on the torpedoing of the thing or anything, the mutiny, and the just like, like that's that whole bit. In that one sentence, you know what I mean?
He's so defeated. Like, to not even, to wait this long in the speech to even bring it up.
Yeah, that's it. I think it was it preceded by Return My Door, I think, was it?
And
was
Give a Hand after? For the Cooks?
Yeah.
That was a big
deal. Do you know how hard it is to cook on a submarine for 2 years, yeah. never going ashore?
And it's so folksily done about the mutiny. Like, the mutiny probably happened in, like, month two. And he's probably yelled about it once a month, and now it's like, just to wrap up on the mutiny.
Yeah, I hate to bring this up
heard my
again,
thoughts.
You know? Yeah, the picture, he paints such an amazing picture with his, and I assume part of it's his delivery, but his use of words, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, it's really quite stunning.
Yeah, it's very well written. And as you pointed out, it's written for the ear. Like, you don't have act outs and stuff.
Well, and it's amazing to me too, like that whole bit about how he kept getting the men trying to get them to clap for the cooks, and the joke obviously is that the cooks are horrible and maybe some of them had food poisoning or something. But we never have the benefit of hearing the other side of these conversations, and we're just okay with it. On the phone, it makes a lot more sense. You could do that on a television show where you don't hear the phone, but he's literally standing in front of a group of men. There's no reason for us not to hear the reactions of the men, but we don't. And he is able to tell us what they are without saying what they said. And writing that kind of thing where we have to fill in the blanks with our own brain and filling him in the way he wants us to is
incredible. I think, you know, when you talk about talking on the phone thing, I think he carried that often into his television career too. I mean, I visual memory of him in the hotel version at the desk, the front desk, and often on the phone talking to potential customers and things like that. And that was a sort of a trope. I don't know if that's the right word, but a thing he did throughout his comedy career because he's just so good at it, I think. And painting the picture.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely, you're right. Like, leaving the audience to fill in the blanks was, it's brilliant. Like, that's what you want in comedy. You want to lead people right to the edge, and then they push themselves over.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they've built this image in their head of what's going on. And to see it done so masterfully so early on is.
And he trusted the intelligence of his audience too, which is something that you have to learn in comedy. And I think a lot of people do early on, but he really believed they were up to speed on everything about Abraham Lincoln, everything about Khrushchev. Like, there was no question. And he just believed they were sophisticated. You know what I mean? Like, he did.
Absolutely.
Like these were like nuanced jokes about Abraham Lincoln.
I feel like we need to point out that even in 1960, Abraham Lincoln was still history.
People.
He was 100 years old.
Yeah.
People were like, you remember our last president right before we had Eisenhower?
I don't know anything about the him writing a speech on
Gettysburg
envelopes.
Address? Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get that joke either. But
I wonder, like, I think in the States, this is like kindergarten. They learn about Abraham Lincoln, and it's a much bigger deal to them than it is to us.
And when I heard that, I looked up like pictures, and he did have a shawl, like,
this
distinguished. Yeah, and because I couldn't tell what angle he was going for, of like that Abraham Lincoln was changing little things that ended up being history. But it was like, he's like, oh, you wore a cardigan, that's no good. But he did have a shawl on.
Don't shave it. It's your look.
I thought the joke was the shawl didn't stick around. I didn't realize it did.
And 87. He's what? 87? No,
that's what we call a
grabber.
That's what we call a grabber. That was a great line. The other part I also liked about that Abraham Lincoln bit was explaining the Grant joke to Abraham Lincoln.
Trust me, it'll be funny. Just say it.
And that's such a bold thing to say in a stand-up act, where you're actually pitching a joke within the act that people are then laughing at, saying that somebody doesn't get it, and then assuring that person that what the audience just laughed at.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's funny. Like, the balls.
A lot of levels to that.
And there's say that something you just said is funny is...
And there's a tiny quick beat in there where I feel like Abraham Lincoln thinks, like, oh, he is winning because of the elk. And he's like, no. Like, he's like, just tell them this. And he's like, oh, this? And he's like, no, just tell them this. And then he's sort of listening, and he's like... No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's like, so many unsaid things. So many things we don't get to hear Abraham Lincoln say, but him saying dumb even things today isn't the funny part. It's the reaction to them.
No, it actually
and
is
the reaction
kind of,
tells
the idea
us
of
what
Abraham
he said.
Lincoln being dumb because he was, you know, he's so revered as one of our grand intellects. No, you idiot. Like this. No. Yeah. And remember, what was the you can't fool all the people all the time. Because well, you keep saying it wrong. Yeah. Like, it made me laugh so hard.
Last night you said fool all the people all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the whole conceit of this was that he wasn't necessarily making fun of Abraham Lincoln, but he said if he didn't exist, they'd have to create him. And so it would just be some, you know, patsy who just looks good on television or whatever and says the things they write for him.
Which I think, based on his lengthy setup, I think that was a new concept back then. Like they were like, you're voting for the man and not the policy.
Yeah,
and you're like, of course you're voting for the man.
Yeah.
We're 2017. Yeah, there is no,
there's no policy.
Oh, that was
all
new? That was new? That's when that started?
How nice for you.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. You can grab yourself a beer, go to the washroom. We've got some pencils and papers if you'd like to write some questions for any of the panelists. And then we're going to come back here and chat a little bit more. Thanks a lot.
If there were to be a second half of this show, I think it might go a little something like this.
That was a great lead into the second half of the show. We only take a break because we love applause. Thank you for the two people who applauded sitting down again. And the woos. We also appreciate woos. Okay, cool. So we got a few questions from the audience. Let's see. This one's from Matt. Bob uses very deliberate pacing in his delivery. How has that impacted comedians who followed him? And how do you feel his successors have evolved from his example?
Interesting. I have two prongs, if I may. Awesome. There's a few comics. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Todd Graham's work. He's a Toronto comic. So funny. Check him out, right? I've always thought of him as a new Hartian type comic.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's more absurd than Bob in many ways in his observations, but his demeanor, his manner, his delivery. And so there are, I think, disciples of that school. But I also would argue that a lot of comics, and myself included, because I don't know why I do this, but almost go high energy. I don't know if that's a fear thing. It's partly a fear thing, I think, of if I don't give you time to hate me, then I'll keep going. But like it seems like to me it's almost fearless to pace like that. And you're slower paced than me, Craig. Craig and I have worked together a few times, so I'd argue that you're more of that pace, that thoughtful pace.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about being comfortable with the silences, which I think definitely for him doing a one-way conversation on a phone, you have to be very comfortable with the silences. And that's a thing that a lot of comics aren't comfortable with. If there's any sort of quiet, you need to feel like you need to fill that dead air with something. And he's clearly someone who's very comfortable with that, and I think it's very effective because you let those points hang. So I think
Is it confidence or is it just I guess this must be is by born in confidence that you just believe that you're compelling enough to have that pacing.
And I think having written, like, he knows exactly what he's going to say, so I feel like he knows it's going to work. Like mentioning Todd Graham, it's like he's written this joke, rather than get it over in 2 seconds, he knows how good it is, so he's just going to take 2 minutes to tell it, because why not be funny for two minutes instead? So all the stammering and all the realizing there's four different funny parts in this one liner, so just kind of
let them have their moment in the sun type thing.
No, I think his that's what astonishes me most about Bob Newhart. I think that's what he's. Huh. I think people associate that stammering, slow pace, but I don't think people realize how brave, I guess, in a way that is.
Well, it's interesting you say that because his background is also he was an accountant, so pretty slow paced, quiet, solitary job. Your background is in news. My background is in radio and advertising, and in those mediums, you can't have a second of dead air.
Oh, I worked in radio for a couple of years on
right.
Air as
so
well.
On the radio, if you want to screw up a bunch of DJs at your house for a party, you just turn the volume down on the music and they all just stop and like, kind of freak out. Like silence is the enemy, right? And then with advertising, you've got a 30-second commercial and you have to fill every half second with copy.
Because it's worth so much money.
Yeah, exactly. So, my type of humor too, when I'm like doing stand-up or sketches, yeah, wall-to-wall noise and energy. I'm almost like a game show host as opposed to Bob style. So yeah, it depends.
I'd like to try that. Too. I don't know how many comics. I know we have a few comics out in the audience. I think it'd be a worthwhile practice to try and do the opposite of what you normally do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just as a challenge.
For sure.
Sometimes people are filling space in a different way anyway, without like people who might tell a joke and then the laughter's starting to, and so they ride the laughter and they just go, while people are laughing, why not? But he just sort of waits it out like with the silence and builds it into the joke.
Yeah. It's a pregnant pause. Like you're almost allowing the tension to build rather than diffusing it.
Robin Williams would be the opposite.
Opposite.
Yeah.
But I would say to answer the question of like sort of, I think there was some like how it's influenced comedians. So Pete Holmes' new special, his new album, there's one bit where he must have... It feels like it's like 5 minutes, but it's probably 10 seconds of silence where he's about to say something and you know he's about to say something and it stretches on and the audience just starts laughing before he said anything and it keeps going and going and going. And then when he finally says it, there's this huge pop. And I think that's you could say that's a direct descendant. That style, that type of joke is a direct descendant of this Bob Newhart stuff. So.
It's amazing to be able as a performer to plan having people anticipate what you're going to do. That seems like an impossible thing to plan.
Stephen Wright's a bit of that school too. I mean, he's more of a one-liner joke, but that pacing, that delivery, that thoughtfulness, and he almost seems annoyed by the audience when they laugh during during the silences.
But and the fact that they're more sketches almost than stand-up, so mm-hmm. you can count on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder. I was one thing I want to mention is this stand-up. Do we qualify this album as a stand-up album? I don't know.
100%.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah. I would say it's the one-sided conversation, which I think is, I mean, I've got jokes like that in my act.
But that always exists within you telling a story about something that happened,
exactly,
right? Like he never tells you about anything happening. It's always you're in that moment and it's from some person's perspective. And
it struck me more as sketch-ish, like a sketch.
It had sketch elements, I think, for sure. But I would
put a one man sketch show might qualify as stand up.
Yeah, interesting.
Blurred lines.
I don't know anymore. I think we need to address the woman driver comment.
Yeah.
Oh man, right? I think all the women go, but you know what? But it also was 57 years ago this album came out, and it just shows you the things that you could say back then and the things you could never say now. It was fascinating to me. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see both the gentlemen just.
I agree with you completely. I don't think it's like that's the way he came to write. I don't think he realizes that it doesn't need to be a woman at all.
Driver. I know. I actually kept, while I was listening, I kept thinking it could be a teenage boy, it could be an old person, it could be
anybody.
But yeah, it had to be the easy.
So when
gives it a disservice. I think it does a disservice to the bit that he made it a woman and called out the fact that it was a woman, because then it becomes a sexist bit. Whether that's the intention or not.
And it was a funny bit, but it's funny how time has skewed our perceptions of of what's funny and what's not, and what's acceptable and what's not.
I would say there's nothing wrong with it being a woman driver, because it could be, as you said, it could be any driver. But the fact that he called it at the beginning was super weird.
Yeah.
And the way he said it, too.
The way he said it was like, which is a woman driver. And you're like, you mean a driver?
Yeah. But the audience was like, ooh, like his audience.
Yeah. Right. Ooh, it's a woman driver.
I see.
Look out for shenanigans.
Yeah, it's like, you know how this is going to go because it's a woman. Yeah, and it's
It would have been much less problematic if he didn't call it out at all.
That's funny. No, and I'm sure at the time it was not even for 30 years was it problematic. Maybe even 40 years. I don't even know. But certainly today,
well, women have gotten much better at driving. I got one boo. I was worried. That was my wife booing. We have another question here. Did anyone else have trouble getting around the sound quality?
A little bit, but... Because I kept saying 1960, I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't find anything was difficult to hear. There was never anything where I felt like I would have rewound it because I missed something. And it's not, you know, sound effects or anything where it's clear it's somebody speaking at a live thing. We've got people laughing and stuff. So as long as you understand what's happening, of course, we'd like higher fidelity, but it didn't take away from me.
Yeah, it's crazy that we could actually do a better recording with our phones.
This podcast is going to be a better recording.
Hopefully. Well, yeah. And compared to actually albums around that time, I feel like it's, or like a lot of the ones I listened to growing up, like Before We Knew He Was Bad, Woody Allen, and like the Smothers Brothers and things, these are like early 70s, and right. They're not as good sound quality as that. I don't know.
I think it was a really small room. I have this image. It was a smaller room than this even almost. And he was, I just felt, do you know what I mean? No, but
we're
I felt
at
like
Roy
it
Thompson
was,
Hall, ladies and gentlemen. That's where we tape the show.
Yeah. But you know, yeah. No, but I felt like it was a really, really intimate crowd, like a really tiny room with a few tables, like a jazz club.
Yeah, it's like dinner theater, I think.
Mm-hmm. I would have never guessed Bob Newhart recorded his album in Houston, Texas.
Is that where it was
me
recorded?
Neither.
Yeah. That wouldn't have been his crowd to me.
I wouldn't think so.
No.
Not these days.
Yeah.
Can you say something, Craig? Pressure.
Oh, I think I was going to say on the sound quality, you got to keep in mind, too, that this is one of the first comedy albums ever. You know what I mean? As far as like a pure stand-up comedy, like I think they had stuff that was like, we're going to sing silly songs, but that's kind of music, right?
Right.
So nobody knew how to really do this. I was reading up a bit on it before, and there was actually a debate or a decision that was made to do it in front of a live audience rather than just going and into a studio and recording it as, almost like a radio sketch.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so right now, like if I was going to go do my album and record it in a studio with no audience.
Is that your album? Do you mean Helicopter Rich available now, or do you mean your next?
My next one. I'm going to just go into a studio and
record
it.
Available on iTunes.
But you'd call me... Thank you for the plug. You'd call me mad if you did that, right? Like if I went into a studio and said, nope, no one's going to hear this about the sound tech in the booth. I'm going to put on headphones and talk into a mic. That's insanity.
That'd be crazy.
They didn't know. So I think they did a pretty decent job, actually, all things considered.
Yeah, they didn't mic the audience, which of course we would do now and right. things like that. Mm-hmm. But again, they didn't know.
But you hear them. Like I always find those ones a bit sterile, like the Adam Sandler or like Norm Macdonald's in-studio album compared to his live album are like night and day to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Sandler did stuff like his albums aren't really stand-up at all, right? They're full-on sketch albums. Yeah. Everything I've heard by him anyway. I don't know if he did a regular stand-up album.
Interesting.
We also have the question, who would you say is the modern equivalent or descendant of Bob Newhart? We mentioned Todd Graham, but has influence reached someone that...
like current?
Yeah.
Other than Pete Holmes. Pete Holmes is a good example.
He's got a very different energy to me, Pete Holmes. Though. He's very...
Yeah. He's much more high energy.
Outgoing and goofy.
Goofy, like,
Bob Newhart is not goofy at all.
True.
Some of the things he says are silly and he stammers, but...
But he's also not like...
He's not a lead.
Like he wanted to call his album The Most Exciting Comedian Since Attila the Hun.
Yeah.
Like that's what he wanted to name the album.
That's what he wanted to name the album.
And then they called it The Button Down Mind of Bob Newhart because look at him. And they put like that as like a tagline.
Yeah.
But it's like things like in retrospect, it all seems more. And when I'm like, don't agree with myself because I'm trying to think of modern comedians. I'm like, because I thought of like Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah,
Mitch Hedberg came to mind.
He's like doing one-liners and he's chill, but he's so like sort of weird and druggy. But it is more like.
What about Norm Macdonald?
Norm's just being funny, that
sarcastic. He doesn't have that stuttering, but he's a bit of a slower delivery,
he's got a slower
confident.
Pace. He makes you work. Harder than a lot
of comedians. That's what I mean more than anything. There's no direct descent. I mean, Todd Graham.
Now that you put that in my head, I
No, next like, time you see Todd Graham, check it out. Who else? I don't know.
Well, Jeremy, you've mentioned to me before, I think, that Sam Kinison was...
Kinison and Hicks thieved from Newhart.
Did they?
Mercilessly, no.
No. Oh. I like that material. I was like, what? How
did I? No, so no. Different.
Yeah.
They went. They decided not to be as fun.
Well, and you can.
To that point, though, of who's a descendant, I did make one note about the baseball bit, which is a very kind of become a more standard joke format, where it's basically the breakdown of something that we all know very well and breaking down the ridiculous everyday logic. And in that sense, I would say somebody like Jerry Seinfeld and a lot of the observational comedians have taken a lot of that kind of thing.
Deconstructing something.
Like deconstructing things. So that was actually kind of a treat to re-listen to that bit and go, not only do I see that in kind of the biggest comics, but that's sort of a joke type.
What's the deal with baseball?
Yeah.
I wish that was longer. It's one of the shorter bits on that. And there's so many crazy rules in baseball you can get to.
He could have really gone off.
That was a 3-minute, 21-second sketch. The longest one was the Abe Lincoln 7 minutes, 7.5 minutes.
Still,
Abe Lincoln, like when you mentioned Jerry Seinfeld, the Abe Lincoln, when we were talking about like the Grant joke and how it like takes this highfalutin thing down to a level, because the funniest thing I always remember from Jerry Seinfeld's one stand-up album is he's talking about how there's a slot. Like, you can barely get water on an airplane. He has some jokes about airline travel. And
the razor blades.
He's talking about, he's like, and there's a slot for the razor blades. And he's like, who's shaving in there? Like, the Wolfman? And he's like, he's looking in there and he's going, click, 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 click. And it's that, like, little, like, click, click, click. Yeah. Like, he's taking this, like, mythic image of the Wolfman and just doing.
There's so many great parts to that. I love the setup of that joke where he says, who's shaving on the plane?
And that's
funny. It's shaving so much
you're that they're using entire razor blades.
They still have those, too, even on modern planes. Yeah. So I actually went back to the Wright brothers one. They're talking about the John on the toilet and flying at 100. Yeah. That made me chuckle a lot.
I was like, oh, that's a poop joke. Like, that's just.
You don't think of that with.
But the cleanest poop joke you've ever heard, right?
Like,
he never gets quite to the. He says,
guys.
Just when he's about to say as well, let's just say bad press.
Yeah. Oh, so, okay. Just doing bad math in my head. But this album is 57 years old.
Yeah.
Were the Wright brothers, did they not fly in 1905-ish? Which is more recent than.
Wow.
Which I feel like it's why there was like a joke if he's like Willie? Oh, Wilbur. Okay. And people are like laughing like it's hilarious to forget the name of one of the Wright brothers.
That's impossible.
Because that was like more recent than this album
is. That's crazy.
Maybe. That's mind-blowing.
That's interesting.
And air travel was relatively new. Like traveling.
Especially classes in air travel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
If only we could go back in time and be that crowd.
I think it would go a little something like this.
Final thoughts on the album, folks. We'll start at the end. Jeremy?
2 out of 10. Do not recommend. I think it's so. I keep thinking of, because we keep talking about what year it was. We keep talking about his style because, like, on the show, he's like, I feel like that's like a huge legacy piece of those sitcoms. Mm-hmm. And he's like developing this style of writing scenes and things that he wouldn't use for like another 2 decades. But I just feel like it's like the beginning of a person, like he's 30. That's weird. But it's like he's like sounds fully formed and he's just I think he's like a really great. Martha, you go first.
I enjoyed the album. I would give it 3 out of 10 stars because I am no asshole. I really enjoyed it, and I was a big fan of him growing up, and it felt like a little warm blanket to me that listening to that, to be honest. He is so brilliant, and I've never really broken down his stuff like we did tonight, and it's really interesting to do that as a comic. 4 stars, screw it.
4 stars out of 4.
Okay.
I just remembered a Bob Newhart joke from his other album that I need to say, because I also kind of petered out on my review. He's perfect. I think he's like a perfect comedian. But there's a one called King Kong where he's the guy reporting that King Kong is climbing the building. He's called the police, and he says, I was going to say they ask him how tall the monkey seems to be, but ape, but they don't, but you don't hear the mass. So I just assume that, but he says, I don't know about, I guess he's about 18 or 19 floors high. And then there's a big pause and you don't know what, and then he goes, well, I just don't know if there's a 13th floor in this building. Which is like a perfect joke.
He is an amazing joke writer.
That's a great joke.
Yeah.
That's a good joke.
I love the pause before that joke.
Yeah.
It's great. You don't expect it. It's great. Craig.
I will say this. I enjoyed it a lot more the second time around. I think I would recommend it to anybody who has any kind of interest in comedy and where comedy came from.
And writing.
And writing.
Yeah.
And, as I said, it's really weird to see these super long, elaborate setups with no jokes in them that are completely separate from the joke. But yeah, I'd recommend it to anybody who has an interest in the history of comedy, and the jokes actually hold up pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah.
They're sort of pure jokes. You know what I mean? They're completely, most of them are completely contextual. So
yeah, some of them I think are a little dated. I mean, it would benefit from being up on your American Russian.
Yeah, Khrushchev. Yeah, Khrushchev aside. Yeah, that's.
But you could easily put that to any world leader. Angela Merkel. You could just put her in there, and that would be the same joke.
Yeah,
you know? That's true. It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Putin
would probably be a good one because you know he's a prime candidate for people wanting to make fun of him. I mean, to see him like a bumbling idiot, I think would be pretty good.
And that's too obvious.
Is it 2 hours? All right. We'll rewrite that in the meantime. Okay. Well, thanks so much, everybody. Craig Fay, you can find his stuff at craigfay.com. He's also on Twitter at Craig Fay Comedy. Martha O'Neill, you can find her on Twitter at Martha_O'Neill, no apostrophe, O-N-E-I-L-L. And you can find jokes and announcements by Mr. Jeremy Woodcock on Twitter at JW Pencil and Pad. Thanks so much, guys, for being here.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And next month, we'll be back here in the same room, November.
You've been listening to Comedy Album Book Club, a Far From Here Comedy and ShowbizMonkeys.com co-production. Music today was performed and produced by Glenn Bouchon, Tim Matthews, Edith Falkenberg, and Jim Spruill, also known as the Something Something Quartet. Thanks for listening and tune in next week to Comedy Album Book Club.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.